Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined in the dugout by my pal, Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, how are you guys?
Welcome back to the returning friend, and on the bullpen phone, Chris Zook, my pal, as well.
I think that was reluctant.
It's not a reluctant one. I just realized
didn't have to say my pal. It sounded a little, I'll take it either way.
Both my pals and I'm happy to have the three-man booth back here.
Appreciate it. It's all good.
It's perfect time for Brian to be back because after talking about what a possibly long road that this certification might go with for unionization for the minors.
Excited and happy, man. It's
happened.
Super cool.
And so you come back on the night that we're actually talking about it happening and not, oh, you know, the process has started.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really cool that it's happening. Obviously, Mike and I are huge pushers/believers in this, right?
Yeah. Proponents.
Yeah. Proponents is probably the right word for that. You know, we're of the full belief that that not only should the miners be unionized, but they should be, you know, treated properly. And it's great that I get to come back to this wonderful, wonderful news.
Yeah. So it went from like, we're going to hand out cards and start the voting process to 17 days later, the MLB recognizing.
It really did happen quickly, eh?
Yeah, I couldn't believe the pace at which it happened. So this is from, I guess, cbc.ca sports yesterday via the Associated Press, Ronald Bloom's story. More than 5,500 minor league baseball players formed a union on Wednesday, completing a lightning-fast organization campaign that launched just 17 days earlier. So, of course, they did not release the sports independent arbitrator Martin Scheinman notified MLB and the MLBPA that the majority of the 5,567 players in the minor league bargaining unit signed union authorization cards since the drive started. Didn't cite a specific number, but high enough that they would be notified and that to my utter incredulity, the MLB just straight up recognized it.
I think they realized that they weren't going to be able to fight it, right? Like that had to be it.
That it was such a foregone conclusion and to be on the wrong side of this, like Lord knows they're going to not be great at the bargaining table, which they have historically not been great at with the MLBPA, but at least at the outset, they will acknowledge that this is now something that they have to do.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I think pretty much what all of us wanted.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is, particularly, it's an effort to boost annual salaries for MILBP players that, you know, could be as low as $10,000 a year.
Yeah. I mean, when I was working with the Gold Eyes, like it was, you could tell, you'd talk to them and you'd find out like, oh man, like things are, and like, that's what the Gold Eyes, because they're independent, but it's the same sort of vibe. Right. And you talk to them about their time, most of their times in minor league ball. And it pretty drastic, you know, talking about sleeping five guys to a one room apartment on cots and like eating nothing but like peanut butter on toast.
Yeah, we've heard these horror stories over the years here. I mean, in one respect, it's better late than never. But the good thing is that this has happened. I would agree with Brian in regards. I think Major League Baseball had no leg to stand on here. There's going to be other battles I'm cautious just because I feel there's still another shoe to drop somewhere. It seems too almost easy in regards to sort of the certification and accepting of it. But that said, is, you know, maybe there's something to this, right? Maybe they finally know, maybe, you know, they've kind of had slave labor for quite a while here in regards to, you know, the minor leagues, and maybe they have to now, take some of this to heart and some of the demands that you know, having unionization of it is going to hopefully help the whole system in general, right? Because at the end of the day, we were talking about this over the last 3 or 4 weeks in regards to that. It just doesn't make any sense. If you don't have a strong minor league, then how are you going to have a strong major league, right? Like, it just baffles me that,
if you starve the feeder system.
You have to give these guys the best chance to succeed possible. And you're not doing that if you're forcing them to live on table scraps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Zook, you and I had talked, I guess, on the last show that, you know, if it came to it and there was, you know, the MLB didn't recognize, like, voluntarily, that they would have to petition the Labor Relations Board to hold an election. Now, the statement that the MLB released, they always have to kind of shoot themselves in the foot. So they said, based on the authorization cards, MLB's voluntary and promptly recognized the MLBPA as the representatives of minor league players. In that same statement, Major League Baseball has a long history of bargaining in good faith with unions.
Uh-huh. Objection.
Yeah. I feel like we have a very, like,
this is called PR.
Great history of not very doing that.
Spin. Very good spin.
It's like, okay, we're gonna take a victory lap for ourselves here, pat ourselves on the back for how we handled this one, and claim that that's, you know, how we handle unions in general.
It's amazing to have short-term memory, right? It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
It's how this, but this is how
there's
this
short-term
works.
Memory, and then there's whatever you'd call this, and that. That's a little bit more than short-term memory. That's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's unreal.
I think it's par for the course. That's, they just negotiated, you know, people forget this year was actually delayed because there was a strike, you know, like, this is what Major League Baseball does. They try to squeeze, you know, or they try and spin it to make them look good all the time, right? I mean, and the flip side is, let's give credit where it is. Roberto Clemente Day, and there was a all Latino starting lineup for the Tampa Bay Rays against the Jays when we're taping on the Thursday night. Pretty significant, right?
History made. Yeah. Although Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, didn't realize he'd made history.
I find that I read that comment after. I'll just say this. I don't quite buy that. But anyways, I mean, if it's, hey, he wants to say those are the great, that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with that either way. They won 11-0. So it wasn't like the lineup was not a good lineup. They went out there but they really had a good interview earlier, just before the game. Sportsnet had an interview with Jose Berrios in regards to the day and the significance of it. And Yeah, it was, you know, that it really, that you know, there's a push there, I think, to try and get the number 21, like Jackie Robinson, maybe retired across the league, and that players were wearing 21 in that game and maybe throughout the league. I would be wholeheartedly agree with that. I think it would be long overdue that they should have I think there was the same impact of what Roberto Clemente did with as Jack Robinson in a different vein, but it's still very impactful of not only his life on the field but off the field.
Right, that he perished in a plane crash trying to take supplies to victims of a earthquake. Right, like he was a selfless player and person and died doing in service of other people. Certainly retiring his number and making it essentially the equivalent of Jackie's 42 that on Clemente Day everyone wears it would be a great tribute and an overdue one. It pains me to say this, but I do want to tip my cap to the Cardinals for two different things. I don't know if you saw this, but Wainwright and Yadier Molina made history.
It's never, nobody's ever going to do that again.
No.
Ever. There's no way, right?
So the
closest catcher duo, explain it. Yeah.
They made their 325th start together.
So what I read here is the closest to that is, the Chicago Battery of Contreras and you think I could remember the other picture?
Hendricks?
Yes, Hendricks, 105. So that's like 200 games behind. I mean, it was a record that was stood for quite a while, but yeah, you have to be, I think they've been together since 2004 or 5, I believe, something like that. Well, I mean, you have to be around 15 to 17 years. You have to be healthy. You have to, you know, be available every 5 days for that start. Yeah, it's an incredible stat and it's something that's going to be would take probably not in our lifetime
like
reach that again,
because I don't see people staying on the same team.
No, I mean, basically
like all of the variables that go into that,
right? You have both of them.
I was speaking about this with a Cardinals friend of mine and about the massness of this, how cool this is, right? And how the chance of this ever happening again is so cataclysmically low. It would require like the O's to call up a superstar prospect pitcher to be with Adley for their entire career in order for them to reach what Yadi and Wainwright are doing. We're talking about two guys that have basically been together since they were both 20 until they were both 40.
Yeah.
It's not happening again.
Not going to get 2 decades of guys playing every season in and out.
It's not going to happen again. It
would have to be very rarefied, right? You'd have to have those stars align again like it did this time, right? Yep. So yeah, I mean, what was the other one?
So they passed Mickey Lolich and Bill Freehan, who had played for the Tigers still technically hold the AL mark, but the overall major league mark is 325 now. And and so the other one is Pujols.
Oh, well, that's,
you know, because he passed A-Rod for .697 and is really
not only
in on 700. Like, and
well, let me just,
I was reading a Fangraphs thing basically predicting when it'll happen.
Well, I'll say this. I don't want to toot it too much, but I did mention at the start of the year, there was an outside chance of this.
You mentioned it.
The machine is kind of really back on track. It's quite amazing, actually. He's, I mean, for a part-time player, let's just be honest, right? He's not in the lineup every day. That stretch he had in kind of July, August, and he's kept it going a bit here. He also is, I believe it's to 2,200 career RBIs, and the pantheon of that is Aaron and, now I've lost the other player already. He's actually only the third player. So, I mean, there's two.
It's just one other than Hank Aaron.
I was going to say Musial, but that doesn't sound right to me for some reason. Anyways, but I mean, pretty much every time he's coming up to a plate and doing something, he's kind of setting records here, which is quite amazing. And if he gets to you know, 700, he's going to have a 20 home run season again, which he hasn't done for a bit here. But I also, I don't know if you heard the story, but when he broke A-Rod's record, the ball was caught by a fan who
offered to give it back to him.
Offered to give it back. Pujols said no because they would have better value for it because they lost a dad a 1 year to the day when they caught the ball. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's just an incredible story. I mean, good on him, right? I mean, he could have, you know, they offered it back and he said, no, you would value it more than I would. And yeah, you know, they took some pictures with him and stuff. And yeah, it's just, you know what, it's, you don't have to like the Cardinals a lot or whatever, but I mean, you know, he's wrapping up his career in a pretty good style. And, you know, he's going to be probably, you know, he'll be a factor in the playoffs, whatever St. Louis does, right? So good on him.
Yeah, no, definitely a cap tip for both those stories. Just because, I mean, that's also another like kind of like longevity of a career you're not necessarily going to see, right? Like that this is, we're not going to like high numbers here. That
this guy was an MVP candidate in 2004. Like just keep that in mind. You know, this
18,
is almost
18 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you know, his peak was like 2010 and 11, right? Like the last 10 years, you know, he sort of, when he went to the Angels.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's where careers go to die.
Yeah. Well, you know, somewhat, but a very similar kind of Ken Griffey, right? Like his, if you looked at the first 10 years of those careers and then kind of what they finished, still an amazing career, Hall of Fame career, of course, but they would have been on the same trajectory. I mean, we would have talked, I mean, Pujols could have got 700. I mean, he could have got another 100 if he was, you know, stayed with St. Louis or kept, you know, healthy and didn't decline as rapidly as did. Yeah, there's possible, but still, I mean, you know, close to 700 home runs is still, you know, that's, you know, outstanding, right? And it's amazing what he's doing at this, you know, as, like I said, literally a part-time player this year. He's hitting home runs and he's actually winning games with some of his performance.
So I managed to find it here. My screen froze up for a second while I was doing it, but it's Babe Ruth.
Oh, well, I kind of thought it was, but I didn't. Yeah, anyways, I said.
The three players hit 2,200 RBIs.
Hey, speaking of that, I know we don't want to talk about this too much just because it's of the team, but I saw this earlier this week about Aaron Judge, and I knew he was having a pretty good year, but they had this graphic as he comes up to the plate, and it was screenshot like for a tweet here, and this is what it showed here for this season for Aaron Judge in major league ranks: home runs 57, RBIs 123, runs 116, WAR 9, on base 414, slugging 692, OPS plus 209, total bases 352, extra base hits 80. What do all those have in common? They're all first in the major league ranks. I've read some stories here. I think it's, to be honest, as much as, you know, we talk about it, I think it's a very sneaky season that he's having.
Well,
there's reading talking about that this could be one of the best seasons ever in major league baseball.
Yeah. So
Mike Petriello wrote a piece yesterday that, I mean, it was about Ohtani and Judge and about WAR in general, but, you know, pointed out that Judge is having one of the top 10 hitting seasons in history if you look at the integrated era.
Yeah. And he's on pace for 11.7 wins above replacement, the first time anybody will have put up above 11 wins above replacement since Barry Bonds. He's on pace to break the Yankees single season home run record, which as much as I love some of the,
might be
the home run record, which you know, I don't necessarily agree with that argument, but I will hear it. You know, and it's, I mean, it's one of the greatest seasons of baseball ever played, and I hate it because it's...
No, but I actually think, but am I wrong?
Your dad must love it, though.
But I feel it's been underplayed a bit here. Like, I know he's in New York, and I know he's doing this stuff, but maybe it's just the times we're in now or whatever, but... it doesn't, like, I don't know if people, like, he's,
I think everything in baseball has been underplayed. Like, yeah. I haven't heard anything about this season, almost anything outside of like actively doing research.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, it's just weird because it's just like he probably if he finishes up strong, he could have like 73, 75 home runs, which, you know,
that's outside a stretch.
Of Bonds and Sosa, he's at 57. I mean,
right, but isn't there only like 2 weeks of baseball left?
Sure, and he hit two like a couple nights ago in a game. Like he hits them in bunches sometimes, right? I mean, even if he gets to 60, I mean, there's only like six or seven players or six or seven times ever it's happened, right? Like it's if he gets 60 or 61, like we're in pretty this is I think the other thing is, which is the more impressive stat, I think, when you look at it, he's 20 ahead of Schwarber, right? Which is the last time that's happened was in Babe Ruth era. Like we're talking about the 1920s, but that the it's not like we're in like
the gap,
you know,
between
it's
him.
The 90s, yeah. Or the aughts where, you know, everyone's hitting a home run. It's not like it's a home run era right now today. Like he's 20 above the nearest competition in the home run derby. Like that, yeah, is showing how impressive, like what he's doing here is he's well ahead of the average of what's going on in baseball.
Right, saw now. A really crazy stat the other day where it was like since the All-Star break, the Yankees roster, not including Judge, has put up like 3 wins above replacement. And in the same time frame, Judge has put up like 6. You yeah. know, oh, just yeah. to show that like he's like literally carrying the team.
Yeah, oh, no, there's been WRC yeah. plus on Fangraphs right now would have him in a 4-way tie for 9th all time.
That's incredible. Like it's, and he's doing it being maybe the best center, like defensive center fielder in baseball.
This is the thing, right? This was the piece that I read, the Mike Petriello piece, was titled "Is War Really Capturing Ohtani's Full Value?" But, you know, pointing out that his 9.3 Judge's 9.3 WAR right now is not just on his hitting, but on exceptional defense.
Yeah. So I think I've come up with a sort of, not necessarily well math, but a back of the envelope equivalent for Ohtani, right? So obviously the WAR bakes in what he does in both pitching and hitting. The argument is that he's doing both. So the logical argument like that would follow with that is that in order to equate, you basically just put in what a league average player would be. So not a replacement level player, but a league average player that they could replace his slot with. So in theory, someplace between 1 and 2 extra wins above replacement because he frees up that slot. It is still kind of a nebulous argument because what they do with that slot really doesn't matter when you're the Los Angeles Angels.
Right, yeah.
But it's at least fair. And
he does get penalized for being DH because
yeah.
they obviously adjust the runs.
Right.
You know, and like, so like he doesn't play the field.
Even if you add the extra 2 wins above replacement, like Ohtani is still not close to what Judge has done this season.
No.
Yeah.
It is a good piece. I'll link to it in the show log.
When Judge, you know, strikes out and wins games, we'll talk about that too. I mean, it's apples and oranges. We're talking yeah. about there's historic. If Judge wasn't doing this year, what Ohtani's doing is pretty historic. What Trout did over the last week is pretty historic. He almost tied the record, right? 7 straight home runs in a season. I mean, it is Fish unfortunate. Like what? Yeah, and guess what? And they kept losing games all last week too. Well, right?
It's neither of their faults. Like I need no, people I know to start that. Realizing no,
those two fishmen are good. The rest of the fishmen.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've seen the stats so of basically bad. where it's Trout's position and Ohtani's position are above the average of the league, and then the rest of the positions across the Angels are dreadful. They're almost last place.
Yep.
But it's you know, like what Brian is saying, it's just unfortunate. There's a lot of good stuff going on. I want to give you one more here, which again under the radar, but Julio, I'll tip my cap to Julio Rodriguez.
He's been
Seattle.
Fun as heck to watch.
Not only is Seattle going to make the playoffs for the first time in 2 decades, but he is the first Major League Baseball player ever to go 25 and 25 in his rookie season, 25 home runs, 25 stolen bases.
He's and so good.
Again, that he's on the West Coast. And
he's so much fun to watch.
But, man, I watched some of these games late night because of I have him on a fantasy team, which is great. But it's also just, you know, when you're watching late and Seattle's doing well this year, they're a great team to watch. And, yeah, he's just, you know, again, we talk a lot about prospects and some of them have panned out this year and some don't. But there's someone who, you know, the hype was on him and he totally has delivered it and more. I mean, if it's not unanimous.
For you know missed prospects is looking at other spots in the Mariners outfield. They have two of them, Jared Kelenic and Kyle Lewis.
Yeah, sure. I mean it happens all over the place, right? I mean and baseball is not like kind of the other professional sports in North America. It's a bit, you know, it takes longer. It depends on where you're coming from, the organizations and the position you're at and stuff. But I mean, if he's not unanimous rookie of the year in the AL, I don't know what's going on, but he's been fun and it's good for baseball to have these young stars and, you know, maybe one day they'll start promoting them and stuff. But overall, I just want people to, if they haven't heard about that, 25 and 25 is nothing to sneeze at. No one does stolen bases anymore, maybe until next year if they, you know, with the bigger bases and all that. But I mean, exceptional year that he's having out there on the West Coast.
Yeah. So real quick, did we want to touch on those rule changes?
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the committee made up of the majority of the voting is through the MLB and not the MLBPA, because I didn't realize the structure is not 50-50, that the MLB gave itself the, you know, whatever they wanted to do, they could make pass. But they are instituting a pitch clock, which I think is a great thing. I think we've seen the results in the minor leagues when they've tested this, that, you know, the taking time between pitches, the limits on pickoff throws does speed up the game.
I think so.
And then because like the idea is like getting the ball in play,
less
downtime.
There's no
the bases. Brian and I have talked about this before on the show. I know both of us are in favor of as a safety issue.
Yeah, both it's a safety issue and
it'll help with stolen bases is what I've read a bit.
Because it's, you know, whatever, 3 inches on either side, right?
So it's, but it matters inches. A bit, right?
It does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like
a
positive byproduct of the safety.
Yes, that's right.
The one that I think is the question
the shift
mark
is the one shift, I don't like,
right? Is that actually what I read a bit is that it's not going to be as drastic as some people think, that you can actually still have the way it's worded is that you can sort of still have a little bit of people. It's not going to be as drastic as you have people on the outfield or the four outfield that a lot of teams employ. But yeah, I feel that one's a bit of a lazy rule, right? Because I don't know where they're trying to benefit for more balls in play. That's what the thinking is behind that,
right? So I mean, that's obviously what they think. The comparison I've seen is to getting rid of the trap in NHL hockey, right? That like this notion of like defensive thing that slows down the game. But
the thing is that
when they're
the
trying
NHL
to argue,
never
oh, sorry,
really
ahead,
outlawed
Brian.
The trap. Sorry, they didn't really ever outlaw
no,
the
never
trap.
Have. Yeah, no,
yeah, they just got rid of the rule which made it possible.
I guess, yeah. So, but the notion that like if you're gonna try to speed up the game, like eliminating possible outs doesn't speed up the game, right? Like if you're giving with one hand, you're taking away with the other by like forcing more balls in play. But also, like if you're a hitter who like the book on you is pretty clear and they can defensively shift to like create an out, I really have a problem with you.
Why can't you just hit it to the other side though?
Yeah. Like, figure it out.
I never understood
like,
that.
Solve it on the field, not with a rule about where people can be on the field, right? Like
somehow they've done it for years. If you're a good hitter, you should be a good hitter, shift or no shift, right?
Yep,
like
I agree.
You put down a bunt, you slap it to the other side when there's no one around. They're literally giving you the base hit. Like that's what the shift is about. But so now we're like, well, they couldn't figure it out, so we're gonna help them out. And I don't know why, you know, that one just seems to be
rankles me.
Yeah, I just feel it's like, well, then just
then take it to your, then switch it around and make the shift to your benefit. Like, to me, the shift is available every time for anyone who gets up on the plate. You got, if they're going to, if they're shading the first, you know, or shading the third, whichever way they think you're going to hit, just slap it the other way, put down a bunt. Like, I mean, they're literally giving you first base. Like, that one I don't get. I like the pitch count. I think that's going to be, it's going to be some growing pains the first year, just because a lot of people aren't going to get used to it. But, and the base is good. The shift one is, I think that one isn't going to, I don't think it's going to give the same results as they think it's going to happen.
No, I'll be curious to see how that one pans out. We are running out of time. So before we go, what's on the pity party?
I'm not sure yet. It's going to be live, so I haven't even assembled it yet.
I will say this. I mean, we haven't had Brian for a bit here, but unless something drastic happens, the Jays did very well of the two series that they had to do well. It was Baltimore earlier, and then just this one with the Tampa Bay. They took 3 out of 5. That's what you had to do, right, to stay above the wild card race. And
they've actually moved drastically a half game up on Tampa.
Right. So they're ahead. So that's good news if you're a Jays fan, because, you know, you're hopefully not going to have, you know, meaningful games at the end. You've hopefully will lock it up here.
No, and Baltimore would have another series at home against Baltimore.
Right.
They really need that home spot, though. They need to get past Seattle. I think they need to have that home seed, I think.
I mean, hey, I think that, you know, depending, you know, I mean, that would be nice, but they're pretty good. They've got their top three pitchers, like, are solid, right? Is even on the road, they wouldn't be so bad. Like, I think just getting in the playoffs, that's the whole,
I don't know, the dome, I think year. The dome matters a lot. The dome matters a lot. Yeah,
but
I
the
think.
Braves, like, if you just see what the Braves, like, get in the playoffs, you can make the run, you get hot, you get your lineup set, you have your bullpen ready to go there, and your starters. It's nice if you're, you know, it was looking at a little bit at the start of this month, and the Jays were kind of maybe letting things go a bit here, but it's been exciting. And the flip side, I hate to say it, Michael, unless this is the biggest week, and you should be talking to Jared about this, but they got a 5-game set against Cleveland starting tomorrow. And they really got to go 4 out of 5, the minimum, really, to have any chance. They've put themselves in a bad position here, that they pretty much have to really kind of play 700-800 ball to have any chance to get to the playoffs now.
Yeah.
They
won 3 to at least keep it close. They're 1 game behind Chicago right now. But this is do or die time. With that, we will sign off. We'll be back next week on that downer note. Perfect to lead into the pity party.
That's well, pity party will pump you back up. And let's play ball!
Strike 3, you're out!